God we're speaking of is the Lord. In fact, one of the reasons we chose the Nicene Creed over the Apostles' Creed is because of what it was written in response to. The Apostles' Creed was written in response to a false teaching known as Gnosticism. And that is not the most prevalent struggle we have in our church today. The most prevalent struggle we have today is a misunderstanding of who Christ is. The Nicene Creed was written in response to a misunderstanding, a confusion, lack of clarity regarding who Christ is. There were some who were arguing that he is man only, and there were some who were arguing that he is God only. The ones who fell into the camp of man only were known as the Arians, taught that God, that Christ is man only. And therefore, the struggle was, how do you surrender to the eternal kingdom of a human being who is not superior to who we are? So the Nicene Creed had to be written to point out that he is both God and man. He is 100% of both. He is the only person in the history of the world who has two essences. He is the only person in the history of the world who is both God and man. He is not 50% of each. He is 100% of each. In no moment does he function as man independent of his deity. And in no moment does he function in his deity independent of his humanity. He is not merely God and man. It is appropriate to identify him as the God-man. So he is able to sympathize and appreciate the lives in which we live. And he is also the legitimate object of our worship. In case you were wondering, we worship the God-man. He was eternally existing as deity, and then by way of his virgin birth, he took on the fullness of humanity. So the one who we reverence, the one to whom we bow, the one who spoke the universe into existence, the one whose voice is on the recording in Genesis chapter 1 when he says, "Let there be light," it is the God-man who we identify as Jesus the Christ. Now, here's why that's significant. He is not merely here to say stuff about himself. He is here to reign. He is the king of a kingdom, and we are the residents. We are the citizens of that kingdom. We named the church embassy because it is our responsibility to put that eternal kingdom on display here in time. You live here on earth and you live here in Denver, but you are citizens of a heavenly kingdom, and your language, your uniform, your speech, the allegiances, your commitments, the flag that you fly should display the eternal kingdom, and it should do so at the expense of any earthly commitments that may be in opposition to that eternal kingdom. Are you tracking with that? Do you hear what I'm saying to you? You are eternal citizens of a never-ending kingdom, and the king of that kingdom is Christ, not stars. Not me. Not the president for whom you vote. Not you. The king of the kingdom is Christ. Now, here's why that's significant. If he is the king of the kingdom, then he is fully licensed to speak into every area of your life, and he is fully licensed to do so without resistance. He is fully licensed to speak into every area of your life, and he is absolutely within his boundaries as king when he expects to do so without resistance. Now, I don't want you to hear me say that he expects to do so without difficulty. I don't want you to hear me say that he expects you to say, "Oh, that's easy. I will just suffer for your sake. Of course, you're the king." I don't expect you to hear me say that. I'm telling you that when it is difficult, it should still come with very little resistance. Because even when you do not know what the next moment will be, you know who the holder of the next moment is. So in the midst of going through hard times, when you don't fully comprehend what he's doing, you're not placing your faith in that which you see unfolding before you. You're placing your faith in the one who is the king of the kingdom. Wow. So you're saying to him, I do not fully comprehend everything that you're having unfold before me. In fact, I do not fully comprehend you. But I know enough about you to understand that you are worthy of my unbridled, absolutely questionless surrender. So you come to him and say, I submit to who you are as king, and I say to you, let everything that you would have for me unfold before me, because you have a better understanding of who I am than I will have of myself ever. Ever. You know what your plans are for me, and you know exactly what you expect me to get out of them. So I'm saying to you, as the king of the kingdom, let this unfold and bring glory and fame to your name by way of me. Are you tracking with that? Now, here's why I told you all of that. That was all the runway. The mistake we make is we think in terms of sin versus virtue. We think in terms of right versus wrong. So the king says to us, do not steal. Do not lie. Do not be underhanded. Don't be shady. We think in terms of right versus wrong. And I want to warn you, if you are committing yourself to a life of discipleship, it is not always that simple. God has not called you to merely be obedient. In many regards, he has called you to be faithful. And sometimes faithfulness is the thing that determines what you will do when the situation is gray. If someone approaches me when I walk out the door today and says, Brandon, listen, got a caseload. I don't know how you measure heroin, so forgive me for getting this wrong. Like, I have a box of heroin in the car. Right. You really don't want your pastor to know how that works. Just for the record. For those of you who are clowning me right now, like, he don't know how to measure heroin. Like, how do you? Okay. I got a crate of heroin in the car. Why don't you come over here to the car with me, and let's knock some of this heroin out right quick. Let's knock this out, okay? Here's what I need you to hear me say. And this is a good thing. I would not struggle. Like, what should I do here? Like, what would God have me do? That's not what would happen. I kind of have some clarity on this one. I know this is a black and white issue. Like, that, I know exactly how this would work. I don't struggle with whether or not I should go down the street. I saw this on the news last night. Someone drove past a park in our city and fired shots out of the window as they drove by. And there were several children and a pregnant woman playing on that park. I don't have to figure out, now, was that right or wrong? I don't have to worry about trying to figure out what it is. Here's the thing. You actually, in your walk of discipleship, will encounter fewer moments of that sort than you may think. Oftentimes, the decision you have to make is far more gray than that. And in those situations, God is saying to you, I'm asking you to be faithful and ask yourself, which decision here among the list of options I have will bring the most glory, bring the most fame to my name? It's not a matter of me saying, don't shoot out the window. It's not a matter of me saying, don't use the heroin. It's, do you move your family to Denver to plant a church? Which one is? Is that right? Was it wrong? It's far more gray than we think. In fact, for those of you, some of you, who have been through premarital with me, one of the things that comes up is I need for you to keep your hands off of one another until you get married. Everyone who has been in this room with me, who went through premarital with me, that came up on day one. That came up on day one. Keep your hands to yourself. And then when you get married, put your hands on each other. Okay, so That's kind of the thing that comes up on day one. That comes up on day one. And the thing I've always observed is, if I get pushback on that, then maybe we shouldn't do this wedding. Because whether or not you should keep your hands to yourself before the wedding day, that's black and white. And my struggle is, when you get married, stuff is not going to be that cut and dry. So if you can't handle that, which is black and white, then how are you going to deal with the grays when you get married? Because life is far more grace. Do we have children or don't we? How many children do we have? Where will we send them to school? It's not as cut and dry as the life that we live. You have to get into the habit of looking at the list of liberties. This is the key word here. A list of liberties that you have before you and deciding whether or not you are willing to sacrifice a liberty for the glory of God. Sometimes the question is not if I do this, is it wrong? It's if by doing this, God is dishonored. And under those circumstances, should I do it? Now, how did that apply from this text? Remember, I told you that the struggle they were having in Corinth was a lack of unity in the church. So what he has done is he has systematically addressed several things that were displays of the lack of unity that was prevalent in the church at Corinth. So we talked about how they were divided over who was the superior teacher among Peter, Paul, and some other personalities in the city. And we are going to end up talking about how they were handling communion. We talk about how they were divided over what marriage should and should not be. Is marriage and sex within marriage sin? We got that in chapter 7. We want to go into some details about how they handled the use of their gifts, because they were using their gifts selfishly instead of using them for the benefit of the whole body. When he gets to chapters 8 and 9, he introduces an answer to a question that they gave him regarding food that had been sacrificed to pagan gods in the temple. And their question was, as believers, can we still eat that food? Can we still eat this food after it has been blessed in the presence, blessed on behalf of pagan deities? You'll notice that we did this last time. It comes up again in chapter 8. He says, now concerning food offered to idols. I told you at the beginning of chapter 7 that he begins the paragraph in that manner because he's responding to a specific question that they asked him. In chapter 7, he says, now concerning marriage. When he gets to chapter 8, he says, now concerning food that has been offered, that has been sacrificed to idols. We know that, quote, all of us possess knowledge, unquote. It's very important that you notice the quotation marks. Because all of us possess knowledge, those are not Paul's words. That was a saying in the city of Corinth. They had a saying there, all of us possess knowledge. That's why it's in quotes here in your translation. And look at how he modifies it. He says, this, quote, knowledge, unquote, it puffs up, but love builds up. If anyone imagines that he knows something, he does not yet know as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he is known by God. Now, here's what he just did. He's not undermining the value of knowledge. He's undermining the value of knowledge that exists independent of affection for your brother. He's not undermining the value of knowledge. It's very important that we get this before we go forward. He's not undermining the value of knowledge. Paul, as an apostle and teacher of scriptures, is a fan of knowledge. He's saying that if you have knowledge that is superior to your affection for your brother, then the knowledge that you have is a hindrance. It's not a benefit. Now, here's the context of this. What was happening is there were Christians in the church who would look at the food that was sacrificed to the idols, and they would say, well, we know that the sacrifice to the idol means nothing because the idol does not exist. And therefore, we can eat this food. We know we can eat this food because the God to whom it was sacrificed does not exist. He gets into details of that very specifically in verse 4. He says, therefore, as to the eating of food offered to idols, we know that an idol has no real existence and that there is no God but one. For although there may be so-called gods in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods. Notice he puts the word gods there in quotes, okay? As indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is one God, the Father, from whom are all things and for whom we exist, and one Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we are all things and through whom we exist. Now, this is what he's saying to them. He says, I concede that you are right when you say that there is only one God, and the idols who are the recipients of the sacrifice, the food that's sacrificed to them, are not real. He says, when you believe that, you are right. When you believe that, when you say you know that, you are correct. In knowing that the idols, the pagan deities, the pagan gods that were the beneficiaries of this food that was sacrificed, when you say that you know these are not real gods, you are right in knowing that. Here's the problem. There are other believers in the room who do not know that. Who do not know that. And the question you have to ask yourself is, when I partake of this food that I know was not actually offered to a pagan god, and I do so in the presence of less mature, weaker believers, and they see me eating this food that they believe is sacrificed to a god, have I caused my brother to stumble? Is your knowledge of the food's cleanliness superior to your affection for your brother who may see you eat the food and therefore stumble by thinking we can eat food that's offered to a god other than the one we worship? Are you tracking with that? Yes. Now, you're thinking, we don't deal with that now. I'll get to that in a minute. Verse 7, he says, however, not all possess this knowledge, but some through former association with idols eat food as really offered to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. So here's what he's saying to you. He's saying, you eat this food that was sacrificed to this idol because you know it's just steak. Because you have to appreciate what's going on here. When you're offering food to an idol, you're not giving them junk. They're not coming to them with it's almost Halloween, and my wife taught me this. Every year, my wife buys candy corns right around Halloween. Don't know why. They're disgusting. And so, but she taught me about 5 or 6 years ago, is we were in the store, and she showed me 2 bags of candy corns, and they didn't look the same. One of them, all the candy corns were stuck together. It was like one big candy corn inside the bag, and it had been like chipped off and everything like that. And then the other one was like, it was fresh. It was made with, you know, in the last 6 or 7 months. And so it was all these 2 bags right next to one another, and you could see the difference between them. She told me that the one that's just one big clump of candy corn, it's from last Halloween, and they didn't sell it. So they put it in a warehouse somewhere, and then they brought it back to Target for this year's Halloween, and then they get rid of it this year, okay? So she's in the candy aisle, and she's sifting through. That's that 2014 candy corn. Nobody wants that. That's that dated stuff, like Macklemore was winning Grammys when this came out. We don't want to eat that. And so she's going through all this candy until she finds the one where the candy corns are all independent and they're not sticking together. And she says, this is the fresh stuff right here. This is the real grade A candy corns. And in her mind, she's like, I cannot, in clear conscience, bring these 2014 candy corns home and give them to my children because it's subpar. It's you got to give my babies the good stuff. Yeah, like they got oranges over there, baby. Like this, none of this is the good stuff. You're picking the best of the bad. But you get her point. You don't bring junk to people you love, okay? Now, you have to understand, they worship these deities in Corinth. So they're not bringing 2014 candy corns to them. No, they got the new stuff, the stuff that just came. They're bringing the best. And the complication everyone has is, among the Christians in the church, that's some good food. And you're saying, we can't eat that stuff? This is some good stuff. No, this is like people with white hats and smocks cook this stuff. You're saying we cannot eat this delicious food because it was offered to a pagan deity. Paul shows up and says, yes, you can. Here's the problem. There are members of your church who believe that because it is sacrificed to the god, the pagan deity, it is now associated with that pagan deity. So when they join you in eating it, they believe that they are simultaneously worshiping the one god of the universe and the sex god of Corinth. They believe that they're simultaneously partaking in the worship of the of Yahweh, the living God, and at the same time worshiping the God of the harvest in Corinth, the God of riches in Corinth. They don't realize that there's a distinction between the God that is real and the gods that are not. And when they partake in it, their conscience is being violated because they are involving themselves in what they believe to be sin. And they only did so because they watched you do it. Now, the question you have to ask yourself is, if it's not wrong, this is the gray area, if it's not wrong for me to eat it, then shouldn't I eat it without giving it any thought? Because we tend to think in black and white. We're a binary culture. The switch is either on or it's off. It's either right or it's wrong. Since it's not wrong, then should I not merely should I just jump into it and imbibe of this food because it's not wrong for me to do so? And Paul is saying, before you answer that question, you should be mindful of the effect it is having on your brothers in the Lord. Look at what he says, starting in verse 9. He says, but take care that this right of yours, this is a very important phrase. Notice what he calls it. He calls it a right. It is not wrong. It is a liberty. You are free to eat this food, okay? But in verse 9 it says, be sure that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if anyone sees you who has knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will he not be encouraged, if his conscience is weak, to eat food offered to idols? And so by your knowledge, this person is destroyed, the brother for whom Christ died. Thus, sinning against your brother and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. He said, in one moment, it is a right. It is a liberty. You are free to imbibe. Okay? But he says, but think about it before you do so, because when you eat this meat, a younger, less mature, less experienced, the word he uses in the passage is weaker. Your weaker brother may see you and think, we're worshiping two gods now. And when you do that, it will result in him stumbling, and it's an undermining of his progressive faith. When he saw you, the more mature, eating from it, it caused him to fall. So instead of allowing that to happen, it is better for you to deprive yourself of your liberties so that your brother will not fall into sin. It is better for you to deprive yourself of a right that you legitimately have so that your brother will not fall into sin. It is better for you to deprive yourself of a right that you have legitimately so that your brother will not fall into sin. Don't hear me as the authority on that. The king of the kingdom who purchased for you the right to eat the meat in the first place is saying to you, instead of allowing someone for whom I die to stumble, then fast from eating the food. Yeah. It's a liberty. And he says, don't do it. You're free to do so, but you shouldn't. It's a right that you have, but if you eat it, it's wrong. Do you hear that? Because you don't want your younger brother to experience what it is for the knowledge you have about the meat to be more important to you than your affection for him. That's what he's saying. Now you're thinking, okay, Brandon, we don't eat meat offered to idols. We don't eat meat sacrificed to idols. We don't experience that. Okay, let me give you a few examples of how this may unfold in our lives. Okay, so I have a friend who was a missionary to Saudi Arabia. And about 10 years ago, he and I were having a conversation about this very passage because some of the the missionaries that were being sent to the field where he was were causing greater trouble than they could recover from, because they were under the impression that in America, because we are women who have experienced liberty and understand our value and have been delivered by Christ and do not live under an oppressive regime, we do not have to wear head coverings in the manner that is customary in this place. And so they would go about trying to share the gospel with the women that they encountered, but they would do so while not wearing the traditional garb, the traditional covering that a woman should be wearing in this cultural norm. Now, do I agree that they have the freedom to not wear the garb? Yes. Do I believe that women are equal to men in every regard, in every aspect of their essence, they are equal in value? Yes. Hold on, pause. I believe that women are of equal value to men. For those of you, because some of you were wondering, though I'm not mincing words. I'm not wordsmithing here. Okay, there are men who are a part of our church planting network who do not believe I am properly complementarian because of the high regard and availability I believe we should be presenting to women. Okay. Do I believe that when they go to Saudi Arabia to preach the gospel to the women there, they should wear a head covering? Yes. Why? Because by not wearing it, by not foregoing that liberty, you've caused not only the men there, but the women there to stumble. So they will not hear the gospel message that you have when all you had to do was put a garment on your head. That's all you had to do. You get to take it off later. You have the right to take it off later. But why would you allow this to be the obstacle, to be the hindrance between you and the eternal destination? You're sitting there thinking, I have the knowledge of this head covering's lack of relevance. And because of that, I'm not going to wear it. And because we decide to not wear it, the person with whom you're trying to share the gospel doesn't hear your message. So your head covering, your freedom to not wear it, has now undermined the eternal destination of the woman for whom you are fighting. That to bring all of these missionaries home and re-educate them. Because you're trying to bring an American deliverance to people who have not experienced it. And in doing so, you're undermining the gospel that you say you hold dear. That's a 1 Corinthians 8 moment. You're thinking, Brandon, we're not going to Saudi Arabia. All right. I intentionally did that one first because I was like, I need for everybody to amen that one. Okay, should they wear their head covering to preach the gospel? Yes. Yes, yes, because it may cause their brother to stumble, okay? That was the Saudi Arabian example. Far removed. It's on the other side of the planet. You're thinking, not nothing to do with us. You ready? Okay. So at some point between my 22nd birthday and I'll be 40 next month, okay? At some point between my 22nd birthday and 40, it became fashionable for women to leave their house nearly naked. Now you're thinking, it existed before then, okay? But before then, people would look at them sideways, like she needs to go put some clothes on. But now, the person who gets the sideways look is the man who stumbles when he looks at her. Okay? Now you're thinking, nobody leaves the house half naked. No one does that. No one does that. No one does that. Who does that? Okay, I'm in a coffee shop on Lincoln, and there's a woman who comes in. This happens about, I don't know, 4 times a week. She comes in because there's a gym that's in the same building as ours. It's in the same building as ours. And she has a very unique set of yoga pants. Yeah, she has a style. Not the same pants every time. Just she has like this, her style of yoga pants. So by virtue of them being yoga pants, they're extremely form-fitting. I know more about her than I should know, okay? Then she helps me because they're tiger stripe yoga pants and every other stripe, you've seen her, every other stripe is sheer. Okay, so not only do I see her form, but I can see like the mole that is on her form. And she has a top that matches it. And so it looks like she has wrapped just a long Band-Aid around her chest. And then stomach down to her waist, sheer. And then there's an inch of fabric, and then an inch of sheer, and then an inch of fabric, and an inch of sheer. And everyone in the room is like, "Brandon, why are you looking?" "Because I'm not blind." And she walked right past me four times every week. I know her workout routine. I knew more about this woman than I should know. I know entirely more about her than I should know. So we're sitting there at a table. I've done this with Pastor Derek there, and I had a meeting this week in which it came up. And then a few weeks ago, I'm sitting there at the table, and she walks by, and she recognizes me because I'm there all the time. So she's like, "Hey, how you doing?" We're just talking, like, "Hey." Hey, what's up? Yeah. "Hey, this coffee is great. Yeah, you know, I was just telling my wife about how good the coffee is here. Yes, I need to bring my wife." And the person with whom I'm sitting, she's like, why are you so weird when you were talking to her?" I said, "I'm weird when I'm in a public place talking to a naked woman. How dare you look at me crazy? I didn't dress her. I didn't tell her what to put on." Now, you have to understand where I'm coming from here, okay? I don't necessarily put myself into the weaker vessel category because, not because I don't experience temptation, but because I know how to run. I told you this a few weeks ago. It's not because I don't look at her and see that she's attractive. It's because I intentionally do all that I can to not partake, to not imbibe of her attractiveness very, very long. And then my wife, she teases me about it, because when I get home, I say, "Sheree, there was a woman in the coffee shop today, and she was almost naked. Just thought you should know." Okay? I intentionally distract, avert my eyes to keep from doing that. But what I notice is when she walks in, when I'm not looking at her, I'm looking at all the men in the room, and every single one of them has intentionally, I mean, if they had laser sight, she would be incinerated. They are just like on her, like spilling coffee on themselves. Why they're like, "Man, look, you better stop. That ain't nothing you do. Don't save the world. Look at her." She is causing the men in this coffee shop to stumble. Now, I had a conversation with a friend of mine with whom I went to college. This conversation took place via Facebook, and I jokingly made reference to that moment. And she said, "You know, the person with the problem there is not her, it is them." Now, I said, to a certain degree, I agree with you, because as far as I know, she's not a believer. And as far as I know, the men who are gawking her are not believers. But it seems to me like you're making this argument so that you can defend your right to dress as she does. And I do know that you are a believer. So if you walk into a place with believing men and you are dressed in this manner, the thing you should ask yourself is this liberty? Because listen to me, wearing yoga pants is a liberty. I don't want you to leave me with anything else. Wearing yoga pants, that's a right. It's a liberty. But the thing you have to always ask yourself is it merely a liberty, or is it profitable? Okay, so when she walks in and she wears these yoga pants that are revealing who she is to that degree, she's exercising in liberty. The thing she should ask herself is the exercising of this liberty causing my brother to stumble? And Paul says in verses 11 through 13, "When I sin against my brother who has been redeemed by Christ, I am sinning against Christ. When I cause my brother to stumble, I am causing the master of both my brother and me to be offended by the sinful act that resulted in his stumbling." Are you tracking with that? Yeah. Everybody got quiet because you all are yoga pants people. All right. Don't send me an email. Don't send me. People have sent me so many articles on this. Brandon, here's a defense of yoga pants. And I didn't say God's opposed to yoga pants. I'm saying God's opposed to you wearing your yoga pants in front of men who will stumble. It is a right. But so was eating meat. And Paul says, if your brother stumbles when seeing you eat the meat, then don't eat the meat. I know it's a right. I know it's a right. I don't need that email. I know that your yoga pants and your salary and the cars you drive and the house you live in, I know that's all a right. I know these are liberties of yours. I know. But the King of the kingdom has come to us and said, value your brother more than you value the exercising of your privileges. If your brother will stumble, then forego the privilege. When I moved here from Texas, I came out of a church context that where everyone, whether they wanted to admit it or not, they're National Baptist. Everyone was National Baptist, okay? Even though the church that I was in was pretty much non-denominational, we were National Baptist. And here's what you don't do when you're Baptist. You don't drink. And then I moved to Colorado, and everybody drinks. A lot. Hard stuff, too. Like, Brandon, here, drink this brown liquor. Where I come from, if you drink something, it's blue or it's red and it has umbrellas and a straw and it was in a blender and people think it's a Slurpee. Nobody knows that what's in there. But no, when the stuff I was being presented with when I moved here was it had like ice cubes in it and brown. And like this stuff don't look like I should be drinking it. And I'm certain I shouldn't because I tasted it and it burned. It burned going down. I was like, I think that's the Holy Spirit telling me. I shouldn't be drinking this. Like this is, and it was very expensive. So they said, you better finish it. I said, well, y'all got some Splenda or something? Cause everybody drinks here. Everybody. Like, I hung out in a very Presbyterian camp. You know what Presbyterians do? They drink. Yes, by the way, Baptists do too, but they do it in the darkness of night. They have the courtesy to not let you see them get drunk, okay? Don't be deceived. They do it behind closed doors. But everybody was openly drinking. So we would go to these church planting places and then we would sit at the table and it'd be 12, 13 church planters around the table and one of the guys was buying everything and they were like, well, I want, give me a Moscow mule and give me a hairy chest and give me a limp dog. And they get to me like, do you have any strawberry lemonade or... And like, what are you doing? I said, hey, man, I'm Baptist. You know, where I come from, we don't drink that stuff. We don't drink it. But then they talked me into it because, like, how do you engage the culture if you're saying to them that this liberty that they have is wrong? So I said, okay, you know what? Occasionally, I will imbibe. Occasionally. I want for all of you to hear me say this, okay? Because I do have the occasional drink. I knew it was going to be you, too. I knew. And the occasional cigar, okay? Yeah. Yes, I knew it was going to be you. I knew Ms. G was going to have my back, okay? I do have the occasional drink. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with drinking, okay? The very first miracle ever performed by the Master in the New Testament was he changed water into wine. John chapter 2. And I do struggle with the fact that he saw fit to turn water into wine, but we can't drink any. Okay? In fact, the wine was so good that the master of the party went to him and said, this is some good stuff. Like, we had some stuff, and everybody drank it up, but you brought the good stuff out later. And all he did was turn the filthy water that was in the hand-washing pots into the best wine they'd ever had, and they said, now drink it. In fact, they were about to run out of... They were about to run out of wine, and everybody's like, you know, when the wine is gone, the party's over. All right, time to go home. And Jesus said, let's keep the party going. It's not sin. It's not sin. Tell people I told you that. The master turned water into wine so that they could drink it. When Timothy had stomach ailments, you know what Paul told him? He said, stop drinking water. The water wasn't clean. He said, stop drinking water. That water's making you sick. You need some of this good stuff. He gave him some wine. It's not sin. Do you hear me? I am very careful when drinking wine in the presence of someone else, because it is remarkably important to me that my knowledge of wine's sinlessness not be more important than the conscience of the brother with whom I am drinking. So there are some of you with whom I know I can do this because it is not a struggle for you. The best mixed drink I have ever had was at Matthew Burkett's house. He knows what he's doing. It's delicious. I felt sinful because you almost don't know what's in it. And you might drink too much of it. And I walked out of there feeling better than I think I should have. But I know that in his presence, that's not a stumbling block. But I know that also there are alcoholics in the room. I also know that there are people who grew up in church traditions where it is sin, where it's identified as sin. I also know that there are some of you for whom this is a confusion and you don't know. Don't think it's a hypocrisy of mine to drink with Matt Burkett and not drink with you. That is me being mindful of the difference between Matt Burkett and you. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 8. I don't drink in your presence because I love you, and it is more important to me that you be in a relationship with me than for me to imbibe of sinless alcohol. I need for you to do a self-assessment. What liberties are in my life that will cause my siblings to stumble, and therefore I should set them aside so that the master's name can be made famous in our world? I don't know every story. I don't know what all of them are. You know yourself better than me. But do a self-assessment. What needs to be set aside so that God may be made famous because I set a liberty aside?